The following content is provided under a Creative Commons license. Your support will help MIT OpenCourseWare continue to offer high-quality educational resources for free. To make a donation or view additional materials from hundreds of MIT courses, visit MIT OpenCourseWare at ocw.mit.edu.
Okay, I'm just going to get started. First, little administrative stuff. Definitely fewer people signed in on Monday than actually showed up in class. So there were a bunch of people who just forgot to sign in. I tried to check off people that I remembered being in class, but if you were in class and you think that you may not have signed in, I have Monday's sign-up sheet here. So this is upfront. I'm not going to pass it around. You can just come up here and sign in if you need to. The actual attendance sheet is, I believe, on the table right there now. Yeah. So make sure that deck is handed off to anybody who comes in later. And I'm going to start off with talking about the reading. We're going to play some games that are related to that reading, and then we're going to take a break, do your setup, and then you'll be playtesting with each other. All right. Who is on a team who doesn't have a game yet? Like, you're waiting for team members to bring it in. You don't think you're going to have a game ready today?
We don't have our board, but we can do it on tiles again.
You can do it on tiles?
So far, we've only playtested in the hallway.
Okay.
We actually bought a board, which is on its way.
Okay. On its way is fine, because we're going to do playtesting in the second half of class. But, what do you mean on its way? You mean like U.S. Postal?
On a truck.
So,
I mean, we've only playtested on tiles so far, and it's worked, so we can just do it on tiles.
On tiles, you mean?
Like out in the hallway.
Oh. Oh, okay, because of the live action game.
Yeah.
All right, that makes sense. Absolutely. That will work fine. All right, so today's reading was Part Learned, and some of you may be surprised that we jumped all the way back to Chapter 1, but it's kind of revisiting an old topic, right? First of all, he talks about the basic concepts of games and play and sports. And I kind of want to go back to that, but as I've already voiced my opinion on the what is game question, as in I think it's not very productive to talk about what is a game, because then you now have to decide what isn't a game. But what I do like to talk about are all the different things that play and game can mean. You know, it's just like, especially in the English language, even in Partlet, he already talks about how it's a little bit weird that we have two different words with two different origins to mean very related things. But as a result of that, these two words have kind of been used and reused to describe a whole bunch of related but not quite the same concepts. And I just want to be able to run through that with you. So we have play, we have game, we have sport. So let's start with all the like the noun definitions. Like what are all the things that play can mean, game can mean, or sport can mean when you are using it as a noun? Yeah.
Game as in I think it's spider maybe? Like to spit game?
Spit bad game. Yeah, okay, all right. So that is okay. I'm going to use the word swagger because I think it gets across the concept across well. Yeah.
Like gaming the system somehow. You're like.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's kind of verby, but yeah.
Oh, that's right. That is verby.
To game to yeah, sure. which means to.
Sorry.
Which how would you describe that concept to game the system? Gaming the system.
I don't know, like it's playing to cheat or
look for loopholes, exploits, right. You know. Exploit maybe. Okay.
Play, it can be like a move or like an action you take.
Like a baseball play. Like, you know, that was a great play.
Yeah.
Okay, so like a tactic almost,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But one that you actually have to execute, not just a concept, but something that actually had to happen.
Like theater performance?
The theater performance, so stage or you know, opera or something like that. Okay. Stage play? What else here?
Play as in, this is not that serious.
Okay.
So just like playing around or something.
So child's play. you know, this this idea of the thing that kids are doing most of the time is play in some sort of like general noun sense. Okay, so I'm gonna go with child. Yeah.
And pressing play,
just
start a video or start like a game.
Okay, so play as in to initiate as a sequence. Sometimes overlaps a little bit with this, but yeah, you know, it's to. You can use play to describe something that happened in the past, or to make play, and to start a play. All right, press play to, you know, actually that's a instead of saying initiate, maybe it's like this icon, right?
Yeah.
This icon on the VCR, or no one uses VCRs. on a QuickTime streaming window. All right. What else? No one's touching sport yet.
Sport can be like to show off, like if you're sporting like a look or a thing.
Okay. So like sporting your colors.
Yeah.
Okay. So like a display of some sort. I could put that more in the verb side of things. Okay.
Could be like a nickname for young.
Hey sport. Yeah.
Old sport.
Yeah.
It can also be like a good sport.
Some sort of virtuous kind of thing.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if I got that right, but
it can mean like fun or hobby. Like you do something for sport.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, there's
fishing for sport.
Fishing for sport? Yeah. And
I hunt for sport.
Fishing for sport as opposed to sport fishing. Right. You know that those are That's another pun, but never mind. So for fun. It's funny because often it's used to make something sound like it's for low stakes when it actually is very high stakes. Like, you know, oh, we're going to hunt people for sport, you know. I just think of like old, like 18th century literature when it comes to, you know, he plays at, you know, it's often like he plays at relationships for sport or something like that, right? You know, it's like something that's supposed to be high stakes, but it's not. Okay, so for, I think maybe instead of for fun, I'll say for low stakes. Or no stakes, okay? Which is bizarre, because sport is usually a very high stakes thing. What else?
People think sport, they tend to think athletics.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so there's a whole section in Partlet where he talks about the possibility that the word game might have come from bending of knees, because gam is some sort of Welsh root for a leg, gam. But that's nowadays more associated with some sort of physical activities and sport tend to go together. What else?
Sort of like something that you hunt, like that sort of game, like.
Like poultry.
Yeah.
Game as in animal that you hunt. Yeah. Okay. Roosevelt first. I didn't know that.
I guess this is more of an idiomatic expression, but people tend to use game when something is also low stakes. Like, you've heard like the phrase, you think this is a game. Yeah.
So again, something that is low stakes. Or is inconsequential, almost, like, you know, like. There's no penalty for having done this thing. Alright, what else?
Well, along the same line, if you're like specifically making a joke out of something, like, you know, he's made in a game to do this, or like,
I guess sort of like an intention of like mocking or
rebuttal. I feel that's related to this one.
Yeah.
Because you're kind of, when you make a game of something, what you're really doing, you're kind of belittling it, right?
Yeah.
So I think that's just a different application of the same concept.
But when you're making a game of something, aren't you also making a structure of it? Or is that different than what you were saying?
For me?
Yeah.
Well, I was saying from like the sort of the mockery sense of it.
Uh-huh.
Like, oh, you know, he's made a game of our process or something like that.
Okay.
But I think making a structure of it is a different application, right? You know, it's like you are applying rules to something that might have not needed it necessarily, but you know, now you're coming up with rules. I'm going to make a game out of tipping, right? You know, because well, we have five people, I mean, let's split the tips somehow. All right.
It could also refer to athletics. Like, before the Super Bowl, everyone talked about the big game.
Big game, right, okay. I'm just going to say the big game. Or the game, the, you know.
And I'm also thinking of the phrase, like, it's all part of the game, where someone might do something.
By the EA Sports logo?
No, isn't that get in the game? Right?
No, I thought it's EA Sports. It's all in the game, right?
That's
how
it
works.
Is it? EA Sports is in the game.
But get in the game is almost certainly a motto of some sporting goods manufacturer.
It's all part of the game.
It's all part of the game, yeah.
Like, when someone does something unexpected, or maybe, like, you might think it's unethical or slightly immoral or going out of the boundaries of.
Are you thinking of Game of Thrones?
Okay, so.
That's all that is.
I'm thinking like a lawyer doing something backhanded and, you know, like the prosecutor is surprised, but the defense attorney's like, it's all part of the game.
Right. Yeah, so that's this sort of like this bounded space where things are permitted, like specific kinds of things that. This introduces a concept that
that
introduces the magic circle. I'm not sure if we have any reading that's touched on this, but this idea that a game is this bounded space where you can do things in it that you wouldn't necessarily be allowed to do in real life.
Right.
And similarly, consequences that happen inside don't necessarily apply to outside, but can be incredibly important while you're inside. Like the ball, where the position of a ball is generally meaningless outside of the game, but inside the game is everything, right? But you know, you can, you know, body check somebody in a hockey rink, you know, but you're not really allowed to do that on the sidewalk. So that I think that gets close to what you, that sort of lawyer application of like, you know, you're allowed to do this within these parameters because this is how the game is played. All right. Whereas, yeah, this I'm wondering about the game, this concept of the game as in the big game, like the Super Bowl, and I'm wondering if that's only used in broadcast, or is that?
So there's certain rights that you can't say, like Super Bowl,
right?
Without NBC's permission or whoever has the rights that year.
Mm-hmm. But even something like, are you going to come over to watch the game, which doesn't necessarily mean it's the Super Bowl.
Right.
It's like here's this weekly thing, but it seems to be very TV related, this the game as this thing that you see on TV. This event is happening at a specific time rather than football in general.
So there's some crossover then, because like the stage aspect, because you're watching it, but also the athletics aspect.
Yeah, it goes back to this.
The sport and
yeah.
The game.
So I'm just going to put TV next to that. Okay. You had your hand up for a while.
Yeah, I was going to say game as like skill, as in like he's got game.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of like skill or ability.
I think that goes back to the swagger.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Kind of.
Well, swagger is like attitude, whereas this might be skill.
I guess it could go either way.
The assumption, I think, is that that those two are related.
Yeah. Well, one's the appearance of skill, and the other is having skill.
Oh, spit man game versus God. Okay, all right. Okay. So actual skill versus the portrayal of that. All right.
The game, like the pickup artist thing.
Oh, that's a sort of that's the dating game, basically. It's kind of what that's described. I know there's a book that's very specifically called The Game, but I think that the use of the word The Game to describe dating in general predates that book by far.
play could also be referred to sports, like like in football, there's a certain like book that you like a collection of plays, a playbook.
Yeah, that's kind of these things, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, but you're right. You can write these things down. You can talk about them as a library of things that you can do.
There's the great game.
The great game.
The was it the was it the Afghan War or the Crimean War?
Oh. So now we're in the great game part two.
Yeah.
Okay. So
like the England versus Russia or Napoleon versus Russia. I forget exactly. Years and dates, but it was a the social political conflict going on at that time.
So that there are specific wars that are referred to as the Great Games.
As a game.
Game of Thrones probably is related to that too, although that includes political. I mean, this even just on a noun side, we've gone through a lot. Somebody didn't, if you include adjectives, and we've brought up a couple of adjectives so far, part of it also talks about how some people can say that you have a game leg, which means you actually have a busted leg, which is kind of weird, but it's his extrapolation of where the word game might actually have come from Celtic origins rather than from Latin origins. How about verbs? Sporting. To sport, well, I guess we already did to sport. Although, you know, to game, to play.
To manipulate.
To
play someone.
To manipulate, yeah, right?
Like playing with somebody.
Yep, exactly.
It's like to execute. Like if you play make a play that's like you're executing it.
Building on that, it could be like a performance. Like to play an instrument.
Okay.
But it's like also kind of like executing.
You're,
executing
a series of things. You execute a stage play, like for like training.
But to play something in a game seems like a much more time limited thing than to play a musical instrument. It seems kind of like a lifetime thing almost. Like I play something. I play the clarinet. It has a very different connotation from I play this queen. You know, I play this card. Those are two possibly on the same spectrum, but they are like almost opposite ends, closely related, but on opposite ends. Sporting, I generally associate again, sort of like to be a good sport, but you know, this is more like fairness, sporting, give someone a sporting chance, kind of thing. Is this just too British? I'm not quite sure.
It might be.
It's funny how this seems to be like the only connotation of game as a verb, right? But gaming is also kind of associated with the gambling industry. Right? If you go to a gaming conference, what they actually mean is that you know they're talking about stakes games, roulette,
what about like to game, like I play games,
Yeah. So that's actually even thing a fairly recent connotation. It's just to you know, usually in association with digital games, but not always, right? So to play games, right? So like when you say someone like I am a gamer, right? It's not implying that I look for loopholes and everything that I can do. Good things. So I'm pretty sure we could keep on going for a while. I just think it's kind of neat that we have all of these different terminologies that all use the same words. It often can get confusing in sort of casual speech. It typically doesn't get too confusing when you're talking to fellow designers or other people in the game industry because the context of which you're using any one of these words typically is pretty clear. and you're always thinking about the context when you say, you know, they're gaming the system, or, you know, they've got game, you know, in the system. It makes very different. It makes it very clear. But I do think that part that kind of slightly opens the box into this, and he tries to touch into into a sort of cross section of all these things that these words can possibly mean, yet it's even richer than that. And that the reason why he does that is so that he can actually get into the topic of his book, which is board games specifically. And he starts breaking down. It's like, all right, now that we know that games and play and sports and everything all kind of fuzzy and muddled and not really very, very clear, how do we sort of at least clarify what we're talking about when it comes to war games? Anyone remember the five things that he ended up with? The five categories of board games that he kind of ends up with? Four of them rhyme. One of them doesn't. Race games?
Space games.
Chase games.
Displace.
And Displace, which he admits he only gave that name because it rhymes. Yeah. And then number five was like, I think he just gave up at this point. It was interesting because he was kind of saying, like, here are these four that traditionally other scholars tend to ignore. Here are these four, which traditionally other scholars like to study because they are bereft of theme. And they look at theme games and they say, like, that's not worthy of study. There's this whole chunk. And Partlet says, wait a minute, how, you know, first of all, most of the games that you'll buy off the shelf right now are probably theme games. And the only reason why there is this interest in race games, chase games, displace games, space games? I'm getting confused. It's because a lot of those are, he also describes those four as positional games. And positional games of the sort that scholars like to study tend to be folk games that have been handed down from generations. Of course, he's narrowing it down to board games. He's not including things like card games, which are also, you know, of which there's also a very rich folk game tradition. He has a whole separate book that I think we also get to in this class that on card games. But this is just specifically his board game work. But he wants to start looking at theme games, and this was him introducing scholarship on theme games. Later on his book. I just want to make you realize that, you know, the whole idea of studying games as a product, we already talked a little bit about how the idea of a game as a product to begin with was fairly new. We're talking about 1900s when that starts to become a thing. But then the idea of studying something like that, oh no, I think we're talking about like 50s and 60s. You know, very, very recent, the idea that games as a product is something that we can study. Whereas things like games as a sport can probably go back a little bit further than that. I mean, statistics, for instance, has been obsessed with baseball for like the longest time because it's very rich and we have good records. So I don't want to go too much into how he arrives at those definitions. You know, he takes a couple of definitions that other people have come up with and tries to build on them. Like, you know, all scholars, he's citing previous work. But what I'd like to have us play today are what I feel are a couple of modern takes on those categories that he came up with. So, you know, the race game, what's a race game? If you want to describe it in one sentence.
Get to the end point first.
Get to the end point first, right? So, this Cartagena, has anyone played this? Okay, so this is a. If you look at the game, it feels a little bit like a tile laying game, because what you're really doing is you are trying to create this path from the jail that you're escaping. You are a bunch of pirates from the jail that you're escaping all the way to the boat, and then, you know, you can run off scot free. But one of the core mechanics is that every player controls a different set of pirates. You have a bunch of different colors, and you're all trying to get to the boat first. So the first person to get your entire gang of pirates to the boat wins. So it's a race game, they're racing against other people. It just happens to be the track that you're racing on happens to be something that you build over time, rather than something that's predetermined. So it's an interesting little take on things. Let me skip Power Grid to the other things. For displays games, has anyone played Twilight Struggle in this room? Okay, I may need you to help explain this game to other people.
Okay. Sure. I played it once, like at the end of my first semester.
Okay, so. All right. Why don't just take a look at the rules again? Yeah, this is it's unfortunately a little bit of a tall order to ask someone to pick up Twilight Struggle in class. But it's worth looking at least as a design system. You know, this is a war game. You are given a map of the world.
Oh gosh.
Okay. You are. It is the Cold War, 1945 to 1989, and there's a whole bunch of things that come from modern game design. Like you have event cards that recall important things that happened: Cuban Missile Crisis, Korean War, Pershing 2 rocket deployed, things like that. But in the end, it's about influence across a space, which just happens to be laid out along on top of the map of the world, to regions like the United States of America, to South and Central America, to Western Europe, Eastern Europe, and so on and so forth. So you're deploying influence points, which is not all that different from the deploying what he calls mans across a space. Trying to be able to seize to push influence towards your faction rather than to the opposite, depending on whether you're playing the US or the Soviet. So, display scapes. Wait, hold on. Are those display scapes? Those are. Well, let me just set to this one. Scotland Yard. Yeah, I think this might have been. Now this was what I intended to bring out as displays, but I'm not so sure whether you capture any pieces in this game. Do you recall?
Capture things? You capture influence. Like you trade influence back and forth over
right
pieces.
You'll capture it, but then you can reintroduce it later.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So this does fit into displays then. Scotland Yard, which I believe we have mentioned in class before, is kind of like a evolution of the chase game. Chase games are like super old. Some of the more famous ancient ones are Scandinavian in origin, a lot of Norse, a lot of Viking games, where you have a king, you have a couple of guards or bodyguards for the king, and you get a whole bunch of like low level pawns all trying to flank the king. That's the theme of a whole genre of games called Tafel, of which chase games will form a big part of. In this game, you are a Mr. X on the run from a bunch of Scotland Yard detectives. And the map is London. More importantly, it's the London public transport system. And what you're trying to do is you're trying to go underground, you're trying to grab cabs, take buses, conceal where you are while the rest of the players who are all controlling the detectives. Actually, yeah, 3 to 6 players. The people who are controlling detectives are basically just trying to flank you. And so, you know, a nice little modern evolution. They have a neat little doodad, which is a way to be able to track the moves that you made without revealing it to your opponents.
Is the bad guy's position private or public?
It is private, but little bits of information pop up.
Okay.
So you reveal that when you're public. Empire Builder is a train game, which one of our grad student alums now almost exclusively studies. But a very interesting kind genre of train game that you may not have heard of called Crayon Rails, where you got given a big sheet of plastic, a plastic laminated board. I guess it's kind of like a jigsaw, and a grease crayon, a bunch of grease crayons actually. Crayola washable crayons, here we go. And you're just drawing your rails across the map, trying to establish your railroad empire. So, this was the one that I was picking up as space because it's all about occupying space, but you're occupying space with a network rather than occupying space with just pieces that you're placing down. you're creating lines across the United States while you're doing that. So I think train games are, this particular genre of train games are an interesting take on the space game. There's a whole other genre of train games that's really more about the economics of what it's like to be a robber baron, trade lord. Those are really fascinating as well. Those go kind of in more in the economic sense, which part of it doesn't really address. Or maybe they, or maybe those fall under his definition of theme games.
Yeah.
And Power Grid is just this like huge mishmash of everything. But I'm using it as an example of a theme game that kind of, where if you play any of these games and you play Power Grid, you'll see the connections. It's a game where you play on a network of Germany, and you're basically, and you're basically trying to create efficient links between different power stations that you're building, and it's not all that different from creating a railroad empire. You know, you just happen to be trying to create a energy generating empire that's going to use different commodities like oil, and I think you can burn refuse. Yeah, you can burn refuse, you can burn coal, and you're all playing on the same space. You can occupy space, so in the way it's kind of like a space game, because once you've taken space, no one else can take it away from you. But most of this game is about the economy rather than about the specific positions where you place things, although that's going to influence your economy. So it's a complicated game. It's very well designed if you have the right set of rules. The rules that come in the box have misprints in them. Specifically, they break things into turns, phases, and steps. And then they kind of don't use those words consistently. If you are interested in seeing how fairly straightforward rules can be really, really confusing, take a look at the rules in Power Grid. Then take a look at the printed rules that I printed out from the laser printer, because these are the revised rules. These are the revised rules from Board Game Geek that have some that are basically translations of the German rules, and they're a little bit more consistent. It is a complicated game. You might not be able to get through a full game and learn the game at the same time. If anyone here play Power Grid, I encourage you to set up a game to help more people through. All right. So what we're going to do, actually. Any questions before we break out into game groups? No? Okay, so we'll play this until about, actually I think all the way into 3 probably, or at least 2:45 or so.
Yeah, we'll call time about then a certain
age. Yeah, we'll have about 15 minutes for you to get all of your playtests ready, and in the last hour is when you're playtesting. Cool?